afraid of the dark? Just relax and let the darkness fall over you.
Welcome to Afraidish, a podcast where we take a deep dive into the history and paranormal while enjoying some tasty adult beverages. From ghost sightings to hauntings, urban legends and cryptids, let's get weird and afraid-ish together. Welcome to episode 35. It's the sixth and our final episode for our Halloween series.
Thank God.
And we have the Halloween special. Yeah. Tomorrow.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, we're crazy. We are crazy-ass motherfuckers.
I think this one and the special are gonna be very short.
I certainly believe that is correct.
We have done a lot of work this month.
Yeah, and I'm exhausted from it.
Me too. All right. What are we drinking?
Well, I am drinking one of those View things, the wine cocktails that come in the same box as the Beat Box.
Yeah.
But they're called View, I think. Anyway, a mixed
Vibe. Yeah.
Why am I thinking View?
I don't know,
man. I'm also high, so there's that. The Vibe mixed with a can of 7-Up Zero.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's drinkable. It's fine.
I'm drinking chocolate coconut rum with Pepsi Zero.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
It is.
Almost tastes like Coke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good. You could really taste the chocolate.
Yeah.
Which is
what Pepsi is missing.
Yeah.
I hate Pepsi. You know that.
I know.
Anyway.
All right. Let's get started with 5 fun facts about death.
Fun.
Yeah.
Everybody's favorite subject.
Five fun facts. Number 1. Death is the irreversible cessation of all biological functions that sustain an organism. For organisms with a brain, death can also be defined as the irreversible cessation of functioning of the whole brain, including the brainstem.
Yep.
That's why you gotta decapitate zombies.
Okay.
Yeah. Number 2. Eyes reveal one of the first signs of death. One of the first visible indicators of death is when the eyes cloud over as fluid and oxygen stops flowing to the corneas. That can happen within 10 minutes after death if the eyes were open, and 24 hours if the eyes were closed.
Wow.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Number 3. Rigor mortis is temporary. Rigor mortis is the stiffening of the body after death due to the depletion of ATP, not sure what that is, which is needed for muscle relaxation. It usually begins within 2 to 6 hours after death and lasts for about 24 hours before the muscles start to relax again.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4, hair and nails don't continue to grow after death.
Nope.
It's a myth that hair and nails grow after death. What really happens is that the body dries out, so the nail beds and skin on the head retract, making nails stubble and hair appear longer.
Yes.
Number 5. Bodies can explode after death.
I know this.
In rare cases, bodies can explode due to the buildup of gases and fluids during decomposition. This is more likely to occur in sealed coffins.
Yes. Fun fact. Both Henry VIII and Elizabeth I exploded in their coffins after death.
That is wild.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Those are my 5 fun facts.
Fun.
Yeah.
Oh, are you waiting on me?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, without further ado, I suppose. For as long as humankind has existed, so has death and grief. While the rituals and traditions have changed throughout the millennium, one thing has remained consistent. We feel deeply when one of our own passes from this plane to the next. For a long time, scientists presumed that the ritual disposition was a modern invention. And by modern, I mean Neanderthals were assumed to be the first who adopted ritualistic burial practices.
That's pretty cool.
There are burials throughout Africa and the Middle East that prove Homo sapiens have been ritualistically burying their dead for as long as the archaeological record survives. However, just outside of Johannesburg, South Africa, one of the oldest yet discovered intentional burial sites to date resides. The remains are that of Homo naledi, an ancient ancestor of Homo sapiens, and they were found in a cave system known as Rising Star. Homo naledi are a small-brained hominid, and up until very recently, small-brained hominins were not believed to have practiced ritualistic burial practices.
That's pretty wild.
The remains appear to have been ceremonial buried within the caves as they were found in a near fetal position, and there were some objects in the caves that may have been grave goods as well. Homo naledi is estimated as having gone extinct sometime within the last 250,000 years.
Wow.
So this is a very old burial.
Yeah.
In 1823, remains were discovered in a cave in Wales. The location of the cave, known today as Goat's Hole Cave, suggests that the mourners were willing to go to great lengths to send off their loved one. William Buckland, who is the archaeologist in charge of the excavation, believed that the remains belonged to a Roman-era female. I found the skeleton enveloped by a coating of a kind of ruddle or ochre, which stained the earth, and some parts extended itself to the distance of about half an inch around the surface of the bones. So basically, the bones and the ground around half an inch from the outside of the bones were all stained red from this ochre powder.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Close to that part of the thigh bone where the pocket is usually worn, surrounded also by ruddle, were about two handfuls of periwinkle shells. At another part of the skeleton, in contact with where the ribs, were 40 or 50 fragments of ivory rods and ivory rings. Both rods and rings, as well as the shells, were stained superficially with red and lay in the same red substance that enveloped the bones. So these objects appeared to have been placed on the body after death, or may have even been part of the clothes, jewelry, and adornments that the person was wearing.
That's pretty cool.
But the red staining is believed to have been caused by an application of a layer of red ochre powder, which is a mineral. So when the flesh decays away, the mineral doesn't go anywhere. It just attaches to the next surface and eventually ends up staining it, the bones and the ground.
Yeah, makes sense.
While Buckland misjudged both the sex of the remains as well as their age, they were neither a woman, nor did they live during the Roman era. The remains were actually those of a male, estimated to be in his 20s, who lived sometime between the Paleolithic and Mesolithic periods, about 35,000 to 10,000 before the Common Era. The remains were found with shells, ivory, flint arrowheads, as well. Both the bones and artifacts closest to them had been stained red. I've already explained that. The Pavilion Man's cause of death is uncertain. He could have passed away from natural causes. There's not enough of the skeleton to determine whether he was maybe ritualistically sacrificed either. The remains are to this day known as the Red Lady of Paviland, is the oldest surviving intentional human burial in the British Islands. The remains are currently the property of the University of Oxford's Museum of Natural History, though there have been calls to return the remains to their homeland in Wales.
As they should be, yeah.
As they should be. Unfortunately, the British don't like to return their stolen property.
Yeah.
Anyway, in what is now Turkey, at the archaeological site known as Quetzalcoyoc. The dead were buried beneath the floors in the family's home. They would have been buried under the floors, beneath hearths, under a raised platform, which many of the homes seem to have in the main room, and sometimes even buried under the beds. Some of the bodies were placed in baskets or wrapped in woven reed mats. Others appear to have been left to desiccate for some time before the disarticulated skeleton was gathered and then placed in its final resting place beneath the family home. Each successive generation would basically tear down the previous generation's dwelling and build their house directly on top of the site where it previously stood. So some of the houses are built on top of layers and layers and layers of generations of previous homes as well as ancestral remains.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah. In Indonesia's Lesser Sunda Islands, the discovery of three burials tells the story of a cultural migration in East Asia. Skeletal remains were discovered in a cave, along with items believed to be grave offerings and red ochre rock art. Each person is believed to have lived within thousands of years of each other. Throughout the years, these people kept returning to this same place. And cultural practices didn't change as quickly as they change in our modern day and age. So you just kind of imagine that there must have been some kind of ancestral or genetic call back to this particular area.
Yeah.
Modern burial practices vary from culture to culture. Our Western culture is quite removed from the process of death. Within the last 150 years, we have gone from having a hand in nearly every step of the dying process to being almost completely hands-off. Pre the Industrial Revolution, women were predominantly responsible for caring for the dying and deceased. Bodies were washed and prepared by their loved ones, and wakes were often held within the family home. In the parlor, the room which would later be known as the living room, because they wanted to reclaim that space after what is now the modern funeral industry kicked up.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
Are you okay? Some practices that have ancient roots but are practiced in some modern cultures include water burials in maritime cultures. The Nordic or Viking culture is one of the most well known for this particular practice. While there is no evidence that the Vikings set bodies adrift on flaming boats, people were often buried within their longships, and it is believed that they did place bodies in ships and push them out to sea to be claimed by the gods. Whether they were set on fire or not, who knows? But either way, there would be no evidence of that practice left behind. Right. 'Cause A, the Norse didn't keep great records. So anything that was written down was by the Christians. I've gone on about that before. But also, we find evidence of burials within these ships. So it appears that they were more likely to just bury the people in the ground.
Right.
But either way, they were still in their ships. Sky burial is another common practice across the entirety of human history and was particularly popular with people who lived in or near mountains. Right now, monks in Nepal, Buddhist monks in Nepal, predominantly practice this. They would take the body of the deceased up to the top of a mountain, offering it to the gods. Animal scavengers were likely seen as messengers of the gods, consuming their offerings on their behalf, particularly in ancient cultures.
Right.
That is believed to be the view. Some cultures even would come back and retrieve the skeletal remains that they could collect, while others left them to return to nature completely. The Malagasy people of Madagascar have a particularly vibrant funerary tradition that lasts for years, known as the Famadihana. Very sorry for mispronouncing that. Translating to dancing with the dead. Every few years, the families gather and open the tombs of their loved ones, where the bodies are removed, dressed in fresh burial clothes, and then are danced back to their tombs, where they will rest for another few years before the practice repeats itself.
That is pretty wild.
This practice is intended to speed up the decomposition process and help encourage the soul to move towards the afterlife. It is a family affair, and it appears to be quite a bittersweet time because, yes, there is merriment. They dance. There's music playing. But then, there's also a lot of sadness and crying and mourning, especially those that are freshly deceased. So it does seem to be a pretty, like I said, bittersweet, but overall celebratory occasion.
Yeah.
In Varanasi, India, the bodies of the dead were paraded through the streets, shrouded in bright colors that represent the virtues of the deceased. So different colors mean different things according to Hindu culture.
That's cool.
The bodies are taken down to the riverside, sprinkled with water from the holy Ganges River, and then are cremated in the Varanasi cremation spaces that are dotted along the banks of the river. This process is intended to help the soul reach salvation, which will then end the cycle of reincarnation, basically allowing the soul to finally rest. Very interesting.
Yeah.
In the Philippines, there is a wide array of death practices that vary from island to island. The Tinguyan, so sorry, people dress the deceased in fancy clothes, sit them upright in a chair, and sometimes will even place a lit cigarette between their lips.
Yeah.
The Benguet people modify this tradition by blindfolding the deceased and positioning their chairs in the entrance of the home. The Shebanu people dress children in red when they attend funerals. It is believed that doing this will help prevent the children from seeing ghosts at the funeral. The Sagada region is famous for its coffin cliffs, which are believed to bring the souls of the dead closer to heaven. People from the Cavite region choose their burial spot before they die. When it becomes apparent that a person will die soon, whether from old age or illness, the family takes them out to the woods, where they will then choose the tree they want to be buried in. The family will then build them a hut where they will live out the rest of their life, and the family will begin work on hollowing out a space in the trunk. Once the person has passed away, they are entombed within the still living tree.
That's pretty cool.
And I searched pictures of this, and it's hard to tell from a picture, but these trees look massive, like almost like the redwoods out in California. Yeah. Absolutely huge trees. And it looked like some of them even had multiple burials per tree. But again, it's hard to get a feel from just a photo. Right. The Torah people of southern Sulawesi in Indonesia have a tradition that will probably make most Westerners extremely uncomfortable. In many cases, the dead will continue to live with their families for years after they've drawn their last breath.
Probably going to be stinky.
Torahan funerals are seen as the single most important day in a person's life, and they are lavish, expensive affairs requiring lots of livestock to be sacrificed. For this reason, many families cannot afford the funeral as soon as their loved one passes away. They have to save up for years. While the family saves, the deceased person continues to be a part of the family. It's as if they never died. They are just treated as if they are sick. The members of the family will come in about 3 times a day, speak to their deceased loved one, and bring them meals, which are left either on the floor by the coffin or on a special table as an offering. This is a family affair. Children are not kept separate from this. If grandma passes away, kids come in every morning before school, say good morning to grandma. I love you. When they get home from school, they come home, tell grandma about their day. And before they go to bed, they go in, tell grandma good night.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah. It's like, again, it's as if the person is not dead. They're just very quiet.
Yeah.
But no matter where you turn, it is clear that our modern Western approach to death and mourning is detached and even cold compared to our ancient ancestors and some of our modern relatives across the globe. In my opinion, this is my opinion, the only real benefit that our modern funerary practices have is the sanitary purpose. We no longer have to risk our personal health to care for the bodies of our deceased loved ones, you know. Right. Yeah. You're not going to get smallpox from cleaning corpses. But I do think that our relationship with our own humanity and our deaths would be much improved if we played a much more active role in the afterlife of our loved ones.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's all I've got.
Yeah, the funeral industry is a racket.
It's a racket. It's a racket, that's for sure. But, and I don't see that really ending anytime soon.
Oh, no.
Because every attempt at alternative disposition practices is
they find ways to say, oh, you can't do this because this isn't safe to do that, blah, blah, blah.
It's not even that. A lot of the time, it's moral arguments.
Yeah.
Like, there's a whole lobby of mortuary bros.
Oh, I think
that lobby Congress.
Lobbying should be illegal.
Oh, absolutely. But, again.
Yeah, I know. I get it.
You know, there's aquamation or alkaline hydrolysis, or I can't remember, but it's aquamation. It's using an extremely alkaline solution in a pressurized canister. You submerge the body, and over the course of like a week or however long it takes, the flesh is dissolved, and all you have left is bones, which are then able to be grinded up just like if the person was cremated.
Right.
And then the liquid even is, you can take the liquid and some people will like fertilize their gardens with it. If like, say grandma was big into gardening, use grandma in the garden.
Well, if it works.
Then there's human composting, which is a big thing right now. It seems to be the method that's picking up the most steam in the alternative death world.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
I saw a technique years ago, and sometimes I still see like the concept video floating around social media, where you're basically freeze-dried and then they place your freeze-dried body on a vibrating plate that shakes you apart, and then you're basically packed into like a peat pot where your loved ones can plant a tree and you're not in the pod with the seed. You are the pod for the seed.
That's pretty wild.
There's also the one where your body can be buried kind of in a fetal position in a pod that breaks down and a tree grows out of. There's green burial, which is burial where you're not embalmed.
Right.
You're in a natural, untreated wooden casket, so you're left to return to nature.
Yeah. Aren't there a couple?
There are two green burial grounds in the state of Missouri, as far as I can find. One almost to the Arkansas border and one up in either Kansas City or St. Louis area.
That's pretty cool.
There's only two in the whole state, though. Cool.
It's not cool that there's only two, but
every cemetery should have a green burial option. I don't know. I wish our culture wasn't so obsessed with embalming. But if you see it from a Christian viewpoint and perspective, like, I understand why people are still so likely to get embalmed, because you need your body to be intact when Jesus comes back.
Sure.
Yep. Huh. And that's why you're not allowed to be an organ donor either. Because what if little Sally gets just part of your liver and Jesus comes back for the revelation and raptures everybody and raises all the dead from their graves, and then, like, you gave your part of your liver, well, now little Sally's gonna have that liver ripped from her body.
You know what? The Christian God could give me another one if he's almighty and powerful. So,
I mean, he made the game. He set the rules. He could have made the rules anything he wanted, but the rules were, you must obey me no matter what I say, even if I ask you to murder your own children.
Yeah.
And you have to love me no matter how badly I treat you, or else go to hell.
You know what? If I come out of my grave, I could grow a new liver or whatever.
Right?
So,
livers regenerate. Yeah. Hearts and kidneys don't, but again, if God is real, he can just make you new ones.
Yeah, no shit. So, that was... You didn't say in the beginning what this was about. It's basically burials from different...
Well, the concept was death and mourning practices throughout history and around the world.
Yeah.
A very broad subject.
Yeah.
And I didn't even touch all the topics that I wanted to, just because... There was so much, and I didn't know what to include. And some subjects, like some things that I was researching, had a lot of conflicting information that was really confusing to me. And,
right.
You know, I don't want to get anything wrong, but yeah, it's just
I found it very interesting. Yeah.
I do too, especially, you know, going through mourning the loss of my brother. And through that, looking at how other cultures deal with grief and loss has been extremely helpful. And, you know, I've been very aware for a long time, but it's just made me even more aware of how detached we are from death. Yeah. And I get it, too, because it's like... then you have to face your own humanity and the fact that you're going to die someday. But I also think that we're doing ourselves a disservice, because no matter what you do, you're going to die someday.
Yeah.
You might as well get comfortable with the idea.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe it's morbid, but...
I don't know.
We're too scared of death.
Yeah. So that was... Hopefully people liked this episode.
Yeah.
Got some information.
I guess.
I liked it. Well, tomorrow is Halloween. Happy Halloween.
It feels weird saying that since it's still a few days away for us right now.
Yeah. Because we're going to record the Halloween special after we get done with this one.
Woo, woo. So, and then we're going to sleep.
Yes. We're going to go to sleep.
I'm so tired.
I hope everybody has a fun Halloween.
Me too.
And... I'll be working.
And remember, nobody likes your kids enough to give them drugs.
Yeah.
Please, nobody.
Nobody's going to lace their candy with drugs and...
That shit's too expensive. Nobody's giving weed gummies to your little crotch goblins.
Unless you want some, then...
I do. You know, I wish dispensaries did that. Like an adult trick-or-treat.
Giving samples out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
That'd be awesome. I would love that day.
Yeah. All right. If you have any stories or requests of anything you want to hear about or know anyone who does, please email me at afraidishpodcast@gmail.com. Instagram and Facebook at afraidishpodcast. Let me know what you want to hear about. Any haunted places you know about and haven't heard on the podcast yet. And all these links will be in the show notes. Show notes. I have this on YouTube as audio, but not video. I always say that because...
Repetition.
Yeah. You can listen anywhere you get your podcasts. rate and review on Apple Podcasts and rate on Spotify. 5 stars, please. And you can also comment on Spotify and there's like, yeah, anywhere you want to comment. Tell me how much you like it.
Or hate it. I'm kidding.
Anyway. You can now support this show with a small monthly donation to help sustain future episodes if you want to. This will help with updating recording equipment and other necessities for the podcast. And hopefully I'll get something on Patreon. The link for that will be in the show notes. And let me know what kind of merch you want. I've got t-shirts, like beer glasses. I can get water bottles. Anything you want, pretty much. Yeah, that's it. Exploring the unknown and mysterious is always interesting, just like trying a new flavor of an adult beverage. Like a cryptid, the taste may be unfamiliar initially, but discovering something unique and exciting makes it worth the adventure. Until next time, don't be afraid of the dark.
Be afraid-ish of what's in it.
Bye.
Bye. And remember, nobody likes your kids enough to give them drugs.
Yeah.
Please, nobody.
Nobody's going to lace their candy with drugs and...
That shit's too expensive. Nobody's giving weed gummies to your little crotch goblins.